Welcome to Perimeter Institute's workshop on quantum estimation, theory, and practice. I, for one, am really excited to be here. I'm really excited about this week. Part of the reason is that I know at least half of you, and I'm really looking forward to reconnecting. And the other half of that is that I don't know about half of you, and I'm really looking forward to getting to know you. But there's an even bigger reason why I'm excited for this week, and that has to do with what we're talking about this week and the purpose of this workshop, which, since I helped to organize it, one would hope that I would be excited about it. Measurement is the center, the soul of science. Without measurement, you have no science. It's the first step, it's the zeroth step in finding out about the world that we live in. And we've been doing measurement for a very, very long time. In fact, I might go even further and say that measurement is at the soul of society. Our earliest records about culture and about the rise of agriculture and civilization indicate that people were measuring things. This is the difference between a hunter-gatherer society and an agricultural civilized society, is that you have references, you have standards, you have standardized ways of observing the world around you and figuring out what it's going to do in the future. And since back 3,000, 5,000 years ago, we've made certain improvements. We started out with very basic devices for measuring length, time, fundamental physical properties of the classical world that we live in. And now, in the year 2008, we have some cooler things going on. Well, hey, you're stealing my thunder. That's not till the next slide. So just to inspire you, a couple of examples. This is an artist's rendering, actually. Unfortunately, we don't have a really cool picture of an optical frequency comb. Basically the thing that Ted Hench got the Nobel Prize for a couple of years ago, though this is a cool new way of doing it in a very small space. This is a device that can measure frequencies or relative frequencies of light down to one part in 10 to the 18th, 18 orders of magnitude. This is pretty cool. This is somewhat better than measuring a qubit in terms of the length of your arm. Here's another one. Okay, pop quiz. Can anybody tell me what this is? Thank you. This is the Hanford installation of LIGO, gravitational wave detector that Caltech has been operating for a couple of years now, actually maybe longer than that. This is actually Google Maps satellite image of LIGO, and it's not very zoomed in. These arms are 4 kilometers long. LIGO is supposed to be able to detect fluctuations in that length caused by fluctuations in space-time itself. We've gone from measuring distance imposed on absolute space to measuring space itself. LIGO measures at approximately 10 to the minus 21. This is pretty cool. We're getting really good at precision measurement. But these are examples of still measuring fundamentally classical quantities. So here's something I'm more excited about. This is thanks to the Keith Schwab group. This is a picture of a nanomechanical resonator. This is a physical system. It's a lever. It goes boing, boing. And they're cooling it to within a factor of 5 of the Heisenberg limit. This is a device that is well described by a quantum state, not by a classical state. Arguably, certain subsystems of this thing that goes boing, boing cannot be described by any classical quantity. When we measure these things, we're moving into a whole new regime. We're measuring things that don't exist classically, properties that are radically different from everything we've measured for the past 5,000 plus years. This is cool. At least I think so. On a related note, some of you may recognize these things. These are individual ions trapped in a Paul trap, again, being measured. I think the red ones are spin up and the blue ones are spin down, but I'm not actually certain about this. That's actually just a wild guess. This thing goes boing, boing. These things don't precisely go boing, boing, but they're definitely single quantum systems. This one is also a single quantum system, although it's a little bit harder to see the quantum system. It's a flux qubit, a squid superconducting flux qubit, where you have a single quantum of flux going around and around. When we measure these things, we're measuring the quantum state of an item, an object that's described by essentially a single quantum. So where are we going with all of this cool measuring and determining states of single quantum systems? Well, there's one obvious answer to where is this going. If you do a Google image search for quantum computer, you should try this sometime. You actually come up with some cool stuff. Do it with Safe Search on. Even with Safe Search on, you still get some pretty interesting things. This is what some people think a quantum computer actually already looks like. Comments on this subject will be strictly prohibited this morning. This is what somebody else thinks a quantum computer looks like. If it really looks like this, then I'm a lot more fired up about my field than I used to be. I think that's a little bit more realistic. I think this is from Michael Cromie's group at Berkeley, and at the moment I think this is what most prospective quantum computers look like, which is a bunch of grad students and postdocs climbing around in what appears to be a gerbil maze. This unfortunately is maybe not quite as realistic, but I really like this one. This is another one that I wish a quantum computer. Notice that the guy actually sits in it in this model. I'm not sure what the input to the algorithm is. On a more serious note, unfortunately, this one doesn't show up when you do a Google image search for quantum computer. This is actually the IBM device that factored 15, a tremendous algorithmic accomplishment. I think that it's, well, OK, Ike Chuang is also a device that factored 15. But more impressively, the big tube in the background did it. So all of these are cool pictures. The one that I think maybe sums it up best for me, despite being experimentally sort of irrelevant, is this one. The cool thing to me about a quantum computer is that it is, in fact, a device that doesn't follow any of the rules of the things we've been measuring and characterizing for the past 5,000 or more years. It's weird. And so if you're going to draw a picture of it, you might as well just make it as weird as possible. And that's a pretty weird picture. What's going on inside a quantum computer? I don't know. I don't understand quantum mechanics. And frankly, I don't think any of us understand quantum mechanics at least as well as we would like to. So with due credit to Chris Fuchs, let me put up another slide that I think is maximally relevant to this workshop. And Chris Fuchs is a guy who has spent the last 10 or 20 years trying really hard to understand quantum mechanics. And he gives this talk. He's given it a couple of hundred times, I think, where this is one of the slides. And he just puts it up there. And you sort of zen out on it for a while. Wow. That's something that over the rest of my career, I hope to figure out the answer to. And over the next week, I hope that we're going to make some progress on that. Because the question of quantum estimation, of estimating states and processes, if I can replace this schematically with a slightly different thing, now I have a quantum state. And not only do I not know what the quantum state is, but I don't know what quantum state it is that I don't know what it is. I think the more we understand about how to actually characterize things that physically exist in our universe, but which structurally baffle us, quantum states and processes, they're out there. Let's figure out about them. What are the rules for learning about them? Because measurement and estimation of physical properties are at the core of science. And so I think that what we are talking about this week is at the frontier of the core of science. This is a slide from Wojciech Zurek. And this is the quantum classical boundary. Ooh. And you notice that there's the classical domain over here on the right, which is full of suns and planets and apparently quantum fluids. I don't really know the justification for putting them over here. And then over here, there's this quantum domain with photons and electrons and gravity wave detectors. And in the past, you notice that there's a sign here that says, do not cross without amplifier. And I think that it's somewhere here, well, maybe not in this version, there was a please show your classical apparatus, right? You have to have a classical apparatus to measure things on either side of the boundary. Well, we're getting beyond that. We still have classical apparatuses, yes. But the conclusions that we come to when we crunch our data are conclusions that are simply not classical. And so we're taking the core of science measurement, and we're pushing it just a little bit at a time across this domain. We're not estimating classical parameters. We're not estimating length. We're not estimating time. We're not estimating probability. We're estimating quantum states. And I think there's at least a good chance that this is fundamentally cool. So I hope that I've managed to inspire you if you weren't already inspired, because this week is all about inspiration. We're at the Perimeter Institute. The Perimeter Institute has a reputation for doing wild and crazy things. It also has a reputation for having lots and lots of blackboards all over the place, which is a good opportunity for me to segue into the logistical details of the workshop. For those of you who just showed up, welcome yet again to Perimeter's Quantum Estimation Workshop. You have wisely managed to skip my 15 minutes of inspiration. Now let me give you 10 minutes of perspiration. So here we are at the Perimeter Institute. In a moment, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the facilities for those of you who haven't been here before. But let me start by showing you the virtual facilities, the virtual home of this conference, which is the website quest.quantumscience.info. I hope that as many of you as possible, I hope that all of you have gone to this website, have logged into this website, have uploaded a picture of yourself to this website. Oh, wait, I know that most of you haven't. So this website is the core of what we're doing. We're trying to push the boundaries, not just with the science, whereby we, I mean the organizers, Ephraim Steinberg, Alexei Gerlachlist, where's Daniel James? Daniel's back there, and myself. We're trying to do something a little bit wild and crazy in terms of the structure of this workshop. And I've sent emails to all of you saying this. Let me say it again. This is your workshop. We invited you. That's essentially the end of our responsibility. We plan on drinking a lot of beer for the rest of the week. You are highly encouraged to join us. But before, during, or after your Canadian patriotic beer drinking, who's seen Strange Brew, the movie? Never mind. We want you to get involved. We've solicited talks from a number of you. We've scheduled those talks. If you look at the schedule, in fact, on this website, where did my pointer go? Once you log in, which you should be able to do, and if you can't, please contact one of the organizers right away. Once you log into this website, you will find that you have various options over here on the left, and one of them is the schedule. And the schedule is thinking about. There we go. So if you go here, you can see what we've scheduled. And here are some talks. Here's today's schedule for Monday the 25th. If you scroll on down, you'll get to Tuesday and Wednesday. And you notice as you go along, there are more and more of these yellow bars. These yellow bars are unstructured time. Now, I like unstructured time. But one of the reasons that I like unstructured time is because we can structure it. And so that's what I'm going to ask you to do over the rest of this week. We have somewhere between 9, 10, 11, something like that, slots. Those slots are going to be filled with sessions, with seminars, with talks that you propose. And so I want to urge you, please, go on the website. This is mandatory. Rack your brain. Come up with something that you would like to tell your colleagues about. You don't have to know that your colleagues are interested, because your colleagues are going to decide whether they're interested. That's the second part of this. Come up with something that you would like to know about. And the way that you do this is over here, proposed sessions. Here we go. Here's a list of proposed sessions. There's a very easy link here, propose new session. You click on that, bang, you can propose a new session. We have panel discussions. We have plain old discussions where everybody gets in a big argument in the room. We have, what else do we have? We have talks. We have informal talks. You don't have to put a whole lot of work into these things, just a quick description that people can evaluate. We have requests for talks. Somebody here, I believe it was Ephraim, said, I'd like someone to explain maximum entropy techniques. So you can say, I always wanted to know about X. Now, the converse to this is there's an opportunity to comment on these. So if you happen to be somebody who knows a lot about maximum entropy, then please click on add a comment. Say, I could talk about that. I could argue about that. And the second thing is, once you go through here, when you find things that you think are interesting, vote on them. For instance, just click rate for one of these, and it will bring up. So the website has changed since the last time I saw it. That's Firefox, actually. Anyway, okay, so one way or another, there are some bugs in this so far. Select your rating. If you're not interested, give it a 1. If you're interested, give it a 5. If you want to be creative, give it something in between. Please go through. Even if you don't come up with any sessions, please rate other people's sessions. This is not being critical of your colleagues. This is so that we, the organizers, know what you're interested in so that we can schedule those sessions for the next day. Yes. No one will know that you were totally uninterested in their talk. Okay, let me conclude here. Let me give you a brief survey of what else is on the website. There's a list of the participants. You can know who else is here if you haven't recognized somebody in the room. For instance, here's Alexei. You know what he looks like because he's uploaded a photograph. Here's Mauro. You know what he looks like. He's going to give the next talk, so you'll find out pretty quickly, et cetera, et cetera. Ignore that one. You get the idea. You can see who's online. And finally, you can also, by clicking on scheduled sessions here, you can see the abstracts for all of the talks in order. If you're scheduled to give a talk and we don't have an abstract up here for you, please check, then please let us know what your abstract is so that other people can see what you're going to talk about. I think that covers everything except one last thing, which is discussion. Right now, the forum is pretty empty. This is a tabula rasa, blank slate. Talk about things. Bring up questions. Did something interesting come up during somebody's talk that you were baffled about? Post a question. Does anybody understand this? In addition, you can obviously talk about things, and the whole point of this workshop is to talk about things during the coffee break. So before I move on to the actual physical logistics, let me reiterate, please log on for post sessions and vote on your colleagues' sessions, because, and do it today more than any other, because tonight the organizers are going to start scheduling the rest of the workshop. We will schedule one day in advance, so check each day to see if the workshop has spawned new topics that weren't there before. Okay, let's see. Oh, one other thing. For speakers, Alexa asked me to mention that there is an option to, I believe it's under scheduled sessions, all right, to upload a PDF of your talk. So you can log in from your laptop, whatever, and okay, so if I was Mauro, because he owns his talk, I could click on edit here and upload my slides, which would be cool because then other people could see those slides even if they missed the talk. Okay, now a moment on the logistical facilities. So this is Perimeter Institute's main building. I don't think that we'll be using the secondary building. We have some wonderful facilities here in addition to the nice views and the beautiful architecture. Okay, it's a matter of taste. The Black Hole Bistro will be offering coffee constantly. There will almost always be two urns of drip coffee. For those of you who like espresso, there's an espresso machine behind the bar. It involves pushing a button so you can make your own pretty easily. If you'd like a cappuccino or a latte or a flat white, then you can either make your own. There's a fridge underneath with milk in it, or you can ask the bistro staff who are here during business hours, would you make me a cappuccino? And they will be delighted to do so. We have an unlimited coffee policy. Please take advantage of it. If you like your drinks cold and either caffeinated or uncaffeinated, we also have fridges around the building full of cold drinks. There will be lunch served every day. For those of you who have a white name badge, this is your ticket to a free lunch. For those of you who have a yellow name badge, there will be a nominal fee for the lunch. I think it's around $9 or so. This evening, we will have a reception for discussing the day and discussing proposed sessions and all that sort of business in the Black Hole Bistro, starting, I believe, at 5:30. It's on the schedule, which will be posted whenever somebody's not giving a talk here at the back of the room and also on the infocaster screen right outside. That's a sort of a central area. The bathrooms are over there. The bistro is over here. The talks are right here, so you'd be walking past that screen constantly. And you can scan what people have proposed, how those sessions have been rated, and what's going to happen over the rest of the day. The reception will, I'm afraid, be a cash bar. We bought a lot of plane tickets. So I don't think it will be terribly expensive. The banquet will be on Wednesday. And the only other logistical thing that I can think of is to point out that Karol Tsiskovsky, one of our own, will be giving the IQC colloquium today over at the Institute for Quantum Computing on the University of Waterloo campus, in the math building, actually, which is where the IQC colloquium happens. We have a lunch break from 12 to 2 today. Carol's talk will be at 12:30 or 12:35. We have a shuttle from PI going over to the math building at 12:20. So if you're interested in going to Carol's talk on random quantum operations, then you can hop in that shuttle. It will be gathering right at the entrance to the building at about 12:20, and there will be a shuttle coming back at 1:45. You'll want to jump out of here rapidly for the lunch break, so we do need to finish on time, to grab your lunch before the shuttle leaves. You'll have about 20 minutes. Any questions about the workshop or things from the organizers that I forgot to mention? All right, then let me reiterate by saying, on behalf of the organizers, welcome to the Perimeter Institute, and thank you very much for coming, and I'm really looking forward to this week.